talk about decentralization and bank and isolation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
Understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsluts.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history. Right side of history.
Hey, hold on, you've got to get us out of here now! I won't let you down. I won't let you down, son.
Revolution.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello.
Hi there, everyone. Good evening. It's another Sunday evening live, and you're with your hosts, Zerafina Angelis and Christine Jo Hart. And tonight we are joined by one of our favourite guests, and that is E.A. Kowetting, black magician and spiritual author. How are you today?
Doing great, thank you.
Good, good. And thanks so much for joining us again. We love having you on.
No, it's always always awesome to jump on and chat with you guys.
Thank you so much. And today, what I thought we could have a bit of a chat about is the subject of manifesting abundance. And I wanted to ask your thoughts about this from a couple of different specific aspects. So obviously, your background is in magic, it's in witchcraft. And so you regularly manifest abundance. You manifest the things into your life that you want to see, and you teach others how to do that as well. So things like wealth, happiness, good health, good fortune, everything that you want to manifest into your life. I imagine you've done so, or at least helped that with magic.
I'll even push it a step beyond that. There's a challenge that was laid down by the magician Austin Osmond Spare, who said that that once you feel like you're a master of your magic, give up everything you own, become homeless, and then use magic to build your life up from there. And so I actually took that challenge when I was about 22 years old. I kind of found myself just losing interest in this world, really, just losing interest to the point that I didn't care to go to work or maintain a living place or whatever. And everything fell apart, and then I found myself just homeless, literally eating out of trash cans, but having had years of magical experience. And so, really, I think that there are a couple things that happen when you're willing – or even if you're unwilling, when you're pushed to that degree, this is where magic and miracles really take on another form. Is when you have to make it happen, when there's no option, when in that situation that I was in, there was no real reason I should have made it. I was I was a pretty dirty looking homeless guy wandering around southern Utah with my eyes in the astral plane, and it was I really should have fallen through the cracks, as they say, but instead I really started relying on all the magical things that I'd learned, because I'd learned how to summon a little bit of money here and there, how to do a little money spell to get an extra $20, the extra $100. I had done a couple things to show myself that this was worthwhile, but I'm going to be honest, I've just never been motivated by money. And so maybe it was like having no money that kind of gave me the initial motivation I needed to challenge myself. But I did within I remember I was sitting in a city park, because if you're a homeless person, that's a really safe place to hang out. So I'm sitting in a city park and I enter into a meditative state, and I get in touch with the spirit guides that had been guiding me. And just said, well, what to do? And they laid out a pretty clear path. The first thing you need to do is get a job, then get a car, then get a house. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I didn't have parents there to really tell me to do these things in life. And so I had the spirits there to tell me how to build an empire literally from nothing. And it was a matter of using techniques like you mentioned, manifestation and such. So I learned those techniques, but those kind of they need some tweaking to make them work. And so I figured out how to do it, because if I didn't, I was going to literally die. And so that's really how I got my start. I would say in using magic for money or for manifesting was there. I'm not motivated by greed or by money at all to a fault. And so that was the first time I think I really cared about money enough to manifest it.
Yeah, no, you're really not. And I think that that's possibly one of the reasons that money does flow to you, is because, you know, you're not chasing it. Because we've talked before about the fact that if you chase something, you often chase it away. And so what you're doing is doing the work that you love and that you believe in. And the money is like a natural result of that. And there's a lot of information out there, and there has been since, well, certainly the biggest thing in terms of the law of attraction and manifesting wealth was probably the book The Secret. And so there's still it's still a really popular subject out there, and there are a lot of people talking about the law of attraction, but very separate to magic and witchcraft. And it seems, from my perspective at least, like it's almost a more socially acceptable thing to be promoting and to be interested in. But, when it comes down to it, how similar or how different are these areas? So the secret and the laws of attraction and manifestation versus magic and witchcraft?
Yeah, no, that's a spectacular question. Thank you. One of the first things about the law of attraction is it does seem to work for the people who have gotten it to work. And so it's more than a systematic approach or any kind of system at all. It really is looking through people who have become successful and seeing, kind of reverse engineering how they did it, and specifically how they did it with their mind state. And now this was done long before The Secret. If you go back to the book by Napoleon Hill back in the 1920s called Think and Grow Rich, he talked about this very thing, where he started observing the most wealthy people in America in the 1920s. And so he spent time with Henry Ford and just rubbed elbows with all the wealthiest people and got their secrets. And what he found out, every single one of them said it comes down to your mindset, where your mind is at. Now this is one of the biggest things, because I've known a lot of people who have used – I haven't known anybody who says that they've gotten successful from what they've learned in The Secret. But I do know a lot of people who are successful who can point to those techniques and say, oh, I've used that, yeah, for sure. But they didn't really learn it from The Secret. They just naturally fell upon it. So it makes me wonder if those people are just naturally magical, because I also know a ton of other people that are wishing and hoping and doing their mantras every day, and they're poor as hell and they're not getting anything from it. This is where I think witchcraft really comes in, because witchcraft isn't, it takes the powerful intentions and the imagination and all of the things that they're used in the secret. They're used in prayer and meditation. It takes all of these and then it combines it with an ancient technology of these spells and rituals. These aren't just ways to stimulate your mind. These are actually technologies that that have existed long before the wheel. And so you can take these technologies of, let's say, even a candle. A candle itself is an ancient, ancient technology, and it happens to be a technology that only humans have mastered. And so that tells us it is a higher technology. And so simply by lighting a candle, you're opening up a gateway, and then by somehow expressing what you want to have happen, we see this in some of the earliest cave drawings of talismans for fertility. We see talismans for a good hunt. People, before they would go do the thing, they had to get their mind into it and make it happen internally before it could happen externally. And so I think the secret is on to that, but they're also missing the just bare bones components of this technology of witchcraft that could really just hyperpower the whole thing.
Well, that's a really good explanation. Thank you. Yeah. And so just going back to that time in your life when you were basically kind of rock bottom, you were homeless, you had nothing, and you got to a stage where you felt like, okay, it's kind of life or death. I need to start changing this. I need to turn this around. How did you, or can you talk us through the steps you took to actually start turning that around? Like, how did you get your mindset into a place of accumulating what you needed without kind of chasing it away by that, you know, feeling of poverty, feeling of fear and desperation, if you like?
Ooh, that, you know, that's powerful, because I think that's part of the reason that it was required for me to go to lose everything first, because fear is usually an anxiety for something that hasn't yet come. Once you've lost everything, once you're living on the streets, eating out of a trash can, there's not much fear left. Mm. You know, there's, I mean, and it doesn't matter, you know, if anybody's looking at you. You have gone as low as you can go, and there's really nothing left to lose. And so from there, yeah, I think that can allow you to make really bold choices. You can see this with a lot of people like Eckhart Tolle, even, you know, Jim Carrey. A lot of people have just skyrocketed from homelessness to success. But that almost seems like that can sometimes be a necessary component, is to start from absolute zero rather than trying to build yourself up from a place of fear. One of the things that I got into it was actually about a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago. I really was considering. I've built a really awesome empire. I've become a living God, and I'm doing what I love for my career, and my life is awesome. And I started noticing that I just had this panic of, what if I lose it all? And I really had to get over that by really just accepting, well, what if I do? Okay, well, I know I can slide all the way to being homeless and eating out of trash cans, and I can still use magic to build it all back up. And so as far as what the actual techniques are, really the first thing is the acknowledgement of, like, it can only go up from here. Like, yeah. That, and no matter how low you are, I think, or even if you're not that low, you do kind of have to have that belief that things will improve. And specifically, the way I've kind of learned to visualize that is if you're looking for things to improve, that means that there is another level for you, and you're becoming subconsciously or unconsciously aware of this other level of existence. And it's not just a new job, it's a whole new lifestyle. And once you can become aware of that, it's really easy to start stepping up into it. Now, from there, though, I started using magic squares and sigils of spirits. And, you know, the only thing I had, really, I had a suitcase or a backpack of clothes and a backpack of books that I left at a friend's house that I would go pick up every week. And I would trade them out books and just have different magic books. So I went and got my magic books, and specifically the ones with sigils, the Goetia and Abramelin. And I really just started opening up my cookbooks and getting to work, because it wasn't a matter of not knowing what to do. It really was just a matter of not really having cared about it until that moment. And so then it was just a matter of really plugging it in, candle magic, sigil magic, you know, calling on different spirits. And then I think the most important thing throughout any wealth magic, any kind of gathering abundance that I'm doing on a spiritual level, the most important thing is to see the result that I want and to feel it as if it's already happened and to live that way, to actually not let myself get locked up in the fear or the anxiety, but just to actually live as if I already have the thing that I want. And then it does tend to come to you. And this is actually, you know, once again, back to Napoleon Hill, or even The Secret touches on this, because it is an ancient concept.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I remember when I read The Secret, when it first came out years ago, it talks about, you know, envision, kind of having visions or imagining yourself in that lifestyle that you want to manifest. So it said, you know, if you... one of the suggestions was to go and view houses that you couldn't possibly afford at that time with like the mindset that you're imagining that you could afford a house like that. And so really kind of living that lifestyle like you talked about. And I mean, one of the questions I'd have, or the, you know, playing devil's advocate. You know,
I'm sorry, if you can hold that question for just a second, I'd like to touch on what you just barely said. One of the important things, I think, is to live the lifestyle in the way that you feel about yourself, the way that you think about your life, and the choices you make, but don't make stupid poor person choices to try to live that lifestyle. Like, a lot of people, oh, well, I'm going to live that lifestyle, so I'm going to get the car that I can't afford or the home that I can't afford. Don't do that. But make you know, I remember I was talking to my adopted sister at one point, telling her that I had just saved up enough money to buy a new car. She says, saved up money to buy a car. That's what rich people do. I'm like, yeah, exactly. That is what rich people do. They're not going to sit and beg for money from a bank. They're going to slap the money down and get, you know, whatever. So it was like, you do have to look at your choice and go, okay, like, is this a choice that's going to lead me to greater prosperity? But also, you know, one of the big things is to see yourself and treat yourself as if you're, yeah, because it's not just an income level. It's actually a personal value that we're trying to gain. And so if you start just leveling up your personal value and imagining, like, what do the people who you admire do in their free time, and go do that and see if you can actually find some of those people. There is something that I think is severely missing from our society that needs to be put back in, and that is mentorship. That we really need to be taking younger people and teaching them so they can become good people in this world. And so I think a part of that is also putting ourselves into the position of having a mentor and looking up to somebody that can teach us things.
Well, that's a really good point. And actually, you answered my question before I had even asked it. So you're kind of psychic like that, which is amazing.
What was the question?
Well, I was going to ask, you know, where do you kind of find the balance between wanting to live that lifestyle and, you know, embody that kind of wealth and that lifestyle that you want to live, without actually tipping over into the edge of spending money that you don't have and making those poor choices? So I think you've actually answered that perfectly.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, and it is there's such It really comes down to how you see yourself. So I remember I was doing this thing when I was working at a cabinet shop, where we had this professional come in that sat us down and said, well, what's your 5-year plan? Where do you want to be in this company in 5 years? And so, well, I'm not going to be in this company in 5 years. I will have retired from my day job, and I will have, I'll be already working in my career as an author. And they kind of laugh, and, well, ha, ha, ha. And I'm like, no, I've already published 5 books. It's just a matter of, anyway, I was already working on my dream, and I was so sure of it that it was like, there's no need to make a 5-year plan with you guys. And I think, you know, that there is. So now, I say that, and it's worked out well for me. I think there might be a lot of people that are like at the bottom of the pile that made these risks and didn't make it. And so, what, you know, I think this kind of comes back to the original point is what's the real deciding factor between somebody who makes it and doesn't? And really, I do think that it is your mindset 100%, like we've been saying. And specifically, I've been through some rough stuff in life. But one of the things that people have always told me about myself in life is that I'm always happy. And even if I'm not, I always kind of come across happy, for the most part, unless I'm having a breakdown. But, But that is that there is something about that almost severe optimism that you do have to inject. And it is a crazy optimism that even if you're failing, even if everything looks like you're failing, if you truly believe your vision and you believe you're on the right track, then nothing can stop you. And like everything that I've ever done, every big step I've ever taken, which has turned out to revolutionize the entire occult field, has been met with mockery by all the people who said I couldn't do it and this is impossible. And so you do have to be able to look at that and just press forward. And that is one thing that you also, one big thing, as you do start gaining wealth, be ready for specifically family and people that you think are your close friends to start asking for money and then start mocking you for having money. Oh, you think you think you're so rich now. You think you're above us. You're going to hear a lot of these things, even though you're not doing anything differently. The fact that you're treating yourself with higher value makes people who are not of that high value kind of tremble.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing is that you're very grateful for everything. So you always express gratitude, and it's genuine as well. You are grateful for all of the good things in life. And I think, you know, I've certainly come across a lot of people, not just in the occult field, but generally, who are always kind of jealous of what other people have rather than happy for them, and always feel like they're owed something, like the world owes them, and resentful about what they don't have. And they wonder why they don't manifest wealth.
Right. Or you know, there's a lot of that. Or the relationship that they want or whatever. And if you're pouting about it, that's probably why you're not getting it. And there is there really is a matter of you know, I've got this saying that I fall back on a lot, that every word you speak is a spell. And so people who have a lot of bad luck, that don't have things working out for them, one of the first things I counsel them to do is to take 1 week and stop complaining. Don't say a single complaint. If you start thinking a complaint, you just try to push it out and try to actually, like you said, turn your attention to gratitude. So if you really need to cancel out complaints, try to focus on gratitude instead. And you're going to start finding you have less and less bad things happen. Even though bad things do happen, the way that we reaffirm it, the way that we even say it out loud, is it can often create a snowball of bad things happening. So, for instance, one of the things that I find myself saying that I try to pull the reins back on, when something happens that I don't like, I smash my finger or whatever, I say, "Of course that would happen," meaning I deserve this. This always happens. This is always going to happen to me. Now, that's a terrible thing to keep manifesting in my thoughts and my speech. That's another thing yet with the law of attraction and the secret as well. I noticed a lot of the people who don't seem to do well with it, they spend their morning doing their affirmations, and then they spend a good deal of the rest of their day complaining about life. And so it's like, what are you putting out there? You know, my buddy Lee is he manifests the exact success that he wants. To me, it's not nearly as much as I want, but he gets exactly what he wants. And part of that is even if business isn't going good, especially if business isn't going good, if somebody he runs into somebody in town, they ask him, "Hey, how are things going?" "Oh, great! I've got business popping off." You know, tells a little white lie, but that actually does something to boost his own self, gets him actually pumped up, allows him to you know, a lot of times make a sale. Where instead, if he was complaining about it, well, of course he's not going to make a sale, and he's going to make himself feel worse and create this again snowball of negativity.
That's a good point, and I think that we need to be mindful of the way we talk to our children and to children in general about money and about wealth as well, because one of the things certainly that I've read in line with the law of attraction theory is that if we grow up hearing, you know, "Oh, money's scarce, we're, you know, we don't have enough money, I'm worried about money," then we're going to kind of embed that fear in our childhood into our later years. So, you know, when it comes to actually talking to our kids about it,
you know, I think this is why, sorry to cut you off. Why we see people who are children of immigrants or children of born into poverty and raised in poverty, that that there's an overachieving there, and those are the people that go out and start new businesses and really try to build these empires. And you know, empire building is fine and everything, but there is there's a little metric that I was told by some extremely wealthy group of extremely wealthy men that said the if you look at the tower that you're trying to build in life and look at how high it is and how big it is and how glamorous it is, that's all a reflection of the inverse hole inside of you that you're trying to fill. Mm. And that hole could be a fear because you didn't feel like you had enough in childhood, or you didn't feel like you were well cared enough, or since mom was working, you didn't have the attention you needed. And these are all holes that you try to stuff up with achievements, when really, like, gosh, if we could just like be happy with being gardeners and painters, then we might have we'd have a less progressed world, but that might be a better thing.
Indeed. And Christine, I'm just going to pass over to you if you have some questions.
Oh, hi. Thanks, Serafina. Welcome, Eric. Hi, how are you?
Thank you. I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
Oh, good. Yes. Good. I just want to ask questions carrying on this vein of on this subject. I find money, you know, hard to get, or it slips through my fingers, or when I achieve a certain point, I give it away to someone else, or I sabotage it. What do you think that is? If people do that?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what this is. Well, I don't know exactly what it is, but I know exactly how to work around it. Okay, so what I found out, I started noticing, especially while you know, before I started having wealth just piled upon me and whatnot, when I was living indeed paycheck to paycheck and had a wife and child at home and all of that, I would notice that, you know, I'd get my tax returns in, or I'd get a bonus at work. And I'd have all these wonderful plans for the things I wanted to do with that money. But as soon as I actually got the money, it was gone to some emergency. And every single time, or somebody else had an emergency and they needed it. And of course, I'm a kind and giving person. So I would do that. And I was really thinking about that with in regards to magic and the magical mindset and how can you really counteract that. And so I thought, you know what? I got a little extra money from some of my first books, and so instead of going and spending that on a bunch of stuff, I just put that in a bank account, $1,000 that I just set in a bank account. I said, that's just for the next emergency, that's there. And that sat there for about 4 or 5 years. I never had another emergency because I already had the funds ready to go. I was already prepared for the emergency, and the emergency didn't come. So I think that this is one of the crazy things you see in reality is you get these loops, a causal loop, where it's like the exact same thing happens over and over and over, just with different people and different details, but it's almost the same lesson that we're trying to learn. And so the very first workaround that I would give people if they're having that problem of, like, I call it like an energetic leak of money, that the first thing you do is first stop giving to other people, put in U.S. dollars, I would put $1,000, but you decide for you what your emergencies usually cost. Mine usually costed about $500 to $800, so I figured $1,000 was good. But there is something with that energy. When you have the energy ready to go, it's almost like the attack never really happens if you're ready to defend it.
And what about if you say for my example, in my life, I built myself up in Fleet Street. I was a private investigator working for the News of the World. I got to a certain point where I was earning six figures, and I decided to bring in another private investigator who I saw as more powerful than me. He came in, brought in phone hacking. I ended up in poverty. And a friend of mine said, you always do that. You always, if you achieve to a certain extent, it's like you think, I shouldn't be here. And then you find someone who believes that they should be there. And the guy I brought in is a multimillionaire. He's a multimillionaire now. He never got caught for the phone hacking. Someone else did, his office boy. So it's like, what is that, do you think?
That is really core level self-value and self-worth. And so it's like, and you know, Serafina mentioned this with things that have been brought up in your family, things that you maybe heard growing up, and even, you know, especially as you started making money yourself in life, that
there probably was not a happy feeling with it. And
No, there wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that that really is a kind of a trauma. And you know, and I'm probably gonna have some of your audience hate me for being sexist here, but there also is, I think, an added trauma in women having to go into the workforce, especially in the generation that you two were both going into the workforce. That it was a much more hostile, male-driven workforce, and I think even biologically, men are built to go out and hunt the food, and women are not built for that. And so, I mean, I know that's an old-school sexist thing to say, but
my son would love you. Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, so with that trauma and the negative beliefs about money that so here's what I found out to work around what you're talking about, because I have the exact same thing. I have to put my goal outside of myself. So for a while, it's been my daughter for sure. And soon it'll be my wife and stepdaughter. And it has to be, I'm doing this for something else. And because if the money is just for me, like I said, I can be homeless and be just happy, but I can't have my daughter be homeless. And so that puts a different emphasis. So if you can find something that you can do, you know, one thing Tony Robbins did, he made his first $1 million, and then he was having a hard time breaking through and making another million. And he figured out that the way to do that was that extra million had to go towards a charity of some sort. And so before you knew it, the next year he was able to make an extra $1 million that all went to a charity, and he was perfectly happy with that. But he couldn't do it for himself because there's like an internal value of like, do I really need $1 million? Like I know for myself where I'm at financially, I don't care to make any more money. It not only is it not important to me, I don't know that it's not even a thing. And I don't make millions of dollars, but I don't think that you need to. And so, and I think I do think that's a big part of it too, is to take a real stock and inventory. Because I was complaining about money I did an evocation of the demonic king Paimon, who's really, really good with money. So I called him and said, yeah, you know, things aren't really that great. And he goes, what do you mean things aren't great? He said, actually take an inventory of your life. Notice the vehicles you have, the home you have. You live like a king. In any other age in the history of humanity, you live like a king. And so don't take away from what you actually have. For most of us that think we're poor, if we have the ability to think I'm too poor, we usually are not that poor by historical standards.
Mm. No, it's exactly true. It's exactly true. My son has said that quite a few times. So what were you saying about the workforce? Do you think women actually have a drive just to be taken care of?
You know, so... Sorry, I've got my guitar doing funky things to me. Unplug it. So I do think that women. This is a delicate topic for sure, but no. Here's what I think the problem is in our society is that we've compartmentalized personal value into the workspace that. You know, one of the first questions people ask you is, oh, what do you do for a living? And mm-hmm. like that is your entire personality. And so there is a need for women to have a strong value that they bring to their society. And in our current society, that is in the workplace for the most part. Especially, you know, the family has become less and less important, I think, in the global societal kind of viewpoint of things. And with that, individual happiness has kind of taken a throne a bit. And so it is a really interesting time. First off, I think everybody ought to do whatever they want to do. If women want to work, if women want to work, you know, whatever you want to do, you do it. If women want to become men, do it. That's awesome. But I think there is something. I think our society is really suffering from a disconnection from nature, a disconnection from our natural selves, from the gods and goddesses that really breathe around us when you're in nature. And so we've lost a lot of the natural flow of who we actually are.
Hmm. I did feel that when I was working. I did feel a sense of, you know, I went into a shop and I brought loads of things and Donna Karan loafers and I brought them back to the car and I looked at them and they slightly didn't have any meaning to them, you know?
Mm. Oh, yeah, no, it absolutely doesn't have, yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that's fun about my home is most if not all of my furniture is made by hand by myself or my friends, and so like for me those objects have meaning, but something you buy, I don't know, there's no spirit in it, and I think it's really unfortunate that because we all are living in almost entirely fake environments, concrete and wood structures around us that don't have spirit in them anymore. So it's almost impossible to say like at this point what a woman today should do, because this is a completely different type of human being we're dealing with. And I do think that's probably a part of something that's really crazy to think about going into the future, is that the human being is not going to be what it was for the entire life of the human being. I think we are dramatically changing. We can see this. I mean, once again, I do think that there is something, I'm not going to say concerning, something very interesting going on in the younger generation's obsession with defining their own gender. I think this is showing us that the human being is becoming a lot more fluid and is going to become something beyond a male female biological entity.
And we all have different sides, don't we? Like, I think I'm more in touch with my male side. And I know sometimes when I'm with company of women that are very in touch with their femininity and they don't have any male in them, I can feel really uncomfortable with women like that, you know? So I think we've all got different within us anyway, haven't we?
Yeah, I really think so. And I think, you know, this is one of the big things where I have to side with the younger generation and say I don't know that gender is very solid as far as male or female. Because I know I've got both. I mean, I paint my fingernails and wear tight pants, and I do some very feminine things, but then I also get on my motorcycle that I built myself and go for a drive. Like, it's I think it's – and, you know, in the left-hand path satanic perspective, you have the symbol of Baphomet or the Sabbatic goat that is both male, female, as well as both man and beast. And so all of these aspects of yourself, I think you do need to honor and bring together.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to get my femininity back. Is there a magic ritual, do you think, for women that have lost their femininity to get it back?
Well, you know, and this might be something that Zerafina could speak to a lot better than I could as far as goddess work, that if you want to get in touch with your femininity, that really you're getting in touch with the goddess, any of the goddesses is going to start to really give you that boost.
Oh, that's interesting. Something I wanted to ask you, I don't know if it's off topic, I don't think it is. Have you had the experience of, you know, when someone comments or does a review on a book or something, and they kind of bring you down, and they kind of really bring you down quite a lot, and you think... Have they put a magic spell in it, or is it possible that people can do that?
I mean, well, okay, so here's, I mean, I have had that happen. You know, I had just a few months ago, I had the BBC accuse me of crimes that I didn't commit at all. Okay. Completely slanderous, but the BBC is known for doing that. That's their whole gig, is they slander people. So, But that really, I took it really personally for sure. And, oh man, it's hard not to when, especially when people are saying public things publicly about you that you feel like you've got to defend. And especially if you're not able to actually defend it, there's no other feeling more frustrating in the world to me than that. But it is part of being in this position, because we've never, in our society, in human society, we've never been able to have so many people hear our voices without seeing our faces, without looking into our eyes and knowing us, knowing them. And so people can say the nastiest stuff because they don't actually have to see that they're hurting you, and they don't actually have to see that sometimes they're going to get punched in the face. And so, exactly. So, yeah. So with that, but, you know, so But this is a very real thing that you have to deal with if you're going, if you have a message that is valuable enough for you to put up with this, you do have to learn how to negotiate it. And so one of the first things I've seen, if somebody says something and it catches my attention and it hurts me, I have to ask if there's something in it that's true, and that's why it hurt me. And if there is, can I improve on that? And then sometimes, you know, when I used to manage social media a lot, I would even go through, if I could find where that person was right, I would actually go post that and say, oh man, thank you for pointing this out. I will do better in the future. Now, here's what I started seeing, that a lot of people, most people will take that for granted. They'll take advantage of that, and they'll just keep hitting you with more and more stuff. There's no, if you're dealing with a troll, there's no making them happy. They're not interested in you improving yourself. They're not giving you actual criticism. They're just trying to get a feeling of significance by tearing somebody down. And so you really have to evaluate that as well. Is like, is this person actually trying to hurt me? And if they are, well, you know, so one thing is yeah, they're, it is, I wouldn't say that it's so possible to put a curse on your words, but if you think about it, when you're sitting there writing, if you're at your keyboard or writing with a pencil and you're filled with anger and hatred and you're taking it out on somebody, that energy goes into those words, whether those words are spoken, but especially if they're written. And so even if that's written and it's published all over the world, that anger that I think that the person had when they wrote it is embedded in the words and is going to be felt by the people who are reading it. Just like you can see, you know, I'll have this experience a lot because I'm pretty sensitive psychic. If I'm reading the news and there's something extremely sad that's gone on, I'll start crying and get choked up because I can feel the energy of the words of the person who wrote the piece. And so that is a very real thing. Now, the first thing is to turn your attention away from it. I mean, unless there's something valuable you can gather from it and say, and if there is a message in the insult that you're able to use to improve yourself, by all means, take that message and improve yourself. You don't even have to tell the person thanks. Just take their message and improve yourself. And that alone is going to resolve any feelings about it. However, if it's just negativity, if there's nothing positive to extract from it, just turn away from it. I've got a policy. I bury my haters in content. So you can hate on me. There's going to be a new one next week you can hate on. And then the week after that and the week after that, for the rest of my life, I'm going to keep going no matter what they do. And so, you know, like if you get a bad review, what I'll do if I start seeing that I've gotten some bad reviews that are taking up visibility is I'll ask my audience to go review that for me. And so I'll just say, hey, guys, like, I've got some bad reviews that are really kind of bumming me out. Could you do me a favor and anybody who wants could go post what you actually think about my book there? And I've actually had a really good turnout of that. Even if it's just a couple people that leave a positive review, or if it's for a consultation, I'll hit up some people that I have really good consultations with and just say, hey, would you mind leaving a review? And then the negative review just gets buried in all the positive, because that is the reality of what we're doing, is we are having a much more positive effect in the world than negative. The negative is really a sliver of people that are really taking their own shit out on us. Excuse my language.
Yeah, it does feel like it. I had a bad one on a book that I wrote about meeting Ian Brady, and this girl was like, you know, you've earned so much money out of your obsession with Ian Brady, and you sent him a picture of you when you were modeling, and that's disgusting, you sick bitch. I just thought, you know, what the fuck, you know? Obviously, I was acting out my sexual abuse when I was a kid. I was acting that out by sort of befriending Brady and visiting Brady.
Like the worst of serial killers. That's crazy. I mean, like, I appreciate how crazy that is, but that is crazy to see, because, like, he was a bad one. Like, as far as, like, the darkness that he had to have gone to, wow.
Yeah. But interestingly, when I met him, he was just, I mean, I was waiting for the sort of darkness, you know, to see what it was like. But it's like it had kind of gone. Do you know what I mean? It was like he was a nest where you could kind of smell that it had been there. They had definitely left him.
Yeah. You know, that very thing, I do think, because we talked about this in a previous conversation, and I've kind of been thinking about it. I do think with serial killers that there is like almost like an inner demon or something that gets fed when they kill, and that gets extremely strong to the point that, you know, a lot of times with serial killers that they're said to sometimes do, you know, supernatural strength things and have psychic abilities that kick in at the last minute that allows them to avoid detection, and some crazy things that happen that they do seem to get into a hyper state that comes from being that predator. And if they go for, you know, long enough without it, then they kind of lose that. John Wayne Gacy kind of had this thing with keeping his demon alive in having young men come to the prison, and he would threaten them and taunt them and play these mind games so he could kind of feed that demon a little bit and keep it throughout his life.
Oh, that's creepy. That must be what Bianchi does, because with Bianchi, the Hillside Strangler, he's definitely got it still in him. You know, I can feel it. So I suppose he must feed his. He gets a lot of women writing to him, so I suppose he just feeds off them in some kind of way.
Yeah. So with that, with what the person posted on your, you know, whatever the review or whatever was, it sounds like, first off, it hurt you because there's a little bit of truth there. You weren't acting to your highest value of self when you were, you know, throwing yourself at Ian Brady. But and so that does go, ouch, that hurt. But just acknowledging that and going, okay, well, you know, you've grown up, you've learned, you know, you're probably not going to do the same thing again, hopefully, and you can move on. But then there is, with every time, though, you look at that and it's like, what is going on in that person's life? And in that person's mind, that they feel like lashing out like that. That's first off, there's definitely a buried attraction there. That person, they're jealous of what you're doing because they wish they could be doing it.
Yeah, I felt that about her. Yeah, I did feel that, actually, which I wrote underneath. And now she's saying, you're obsessed with me. Go and do something, honey. You shouldn't really interact with them, should you, either?
Yeah, no. So that really is when you kind of see somebody that's, I mean, I'll definitely receive criticism from my audience that's real criticism that I look at and go, oh, you guys are right. I shouldn't do that, or I should do this better, and I can take that. But if it's clear that somebody is just a troll, don't give it any thought. Don't even look at it any longer than you need to be able to assess, this is just a troll. Okay, and then just delete, block, and if you have the option, report them and move on. I'll find myself kind of going through, you know, often on Sundays, I'll go through and find myself having to block and report people. And there is a psychosis that builds up with any kind of celebrity. Anytime that you're the center of attention, you can guarantee people are paying attention to you in a creepy way sometimes. And I don't know that there's anything that can be done about it. I don't know that the human being was meant for this kind of interaction as much, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, probably not. Because people don't know you. And they kind of pick out little bits. I mean, according to her, I'd earned loads of money. And actually, I've written loads of books, but haven't earned money. You know, publishers have taken it and haven't given me any money, but I spent 5 years writing it. So there's all that.
No, you don't have, I've got a female stalker who's been stalking me for about 3 years, and you know, I've told her in every single way possible, I'm not interested, and, you know, I'm gonna have to call the police, you know, et cetera, you know, in every way to let her know. But she still, you know, still tries to send me, you know, messages and letters. But what I notice with these is she's not talking about me. She actually doesn't know me at all. She's talking about some crazy delusional person that she's overlaid onto me. And so I think that's often the case with people in public. If they, you know, if somebody really hasn't sat at my dinner table, I don't know how much I can say that I know that person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just these kind of places like Amazon and Goodreads, and, you know, they tend to like people giving shitty comments, and I don't know, they tend to, I feel that they enjoy it somehow, you know?
You know, Zarafina and I were talking about this the other day as well, is that that the internet seems to have done wonders for the human mind, but it's left out the heart completely.
Yes.
And the mind without the heart is, I think, it's a just dark, destructive thing. That really, this is actually one of the things I got from working with the demon Asmodeus, was locking into, because through my life I've really been obsessed with power. And Asmodeus said, you know, don't worry about power. Really focus on your strength, and the strength is in your heart. And really, that is where all of your power is going to emanate from, and your ability to take the hits. You know, it's not about being able to. If you're able to float through life, you're not living your destiny. If you're upsetting people, if people think that you're too much, that then you're pretty sure that you're doing the right thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that what Asmodeus said?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Asmodeus was 100% to embrace myself, dark and light and everything, and just to be that, you know, and specifically to stop. There's a really crazy thing, a truth that exists in reality, that if you're trying to acquire power, you're never going to get it, because even as you're trying to get it, you're telling yourself you don't have it. It's not there yet. And so really acquiring all power comes from like giving it up and just sitting with yourself, just being, once again, just strong in who you are, being able to sit with who you are, and you know, the world's going to do what it's going to do. You're going to have, the more positive effect. And I know you, Chris, you've caused some giants to tremble in your days, for sure, with some of the things you've revealed about what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah, you've caused a commotion, and so getting a negative review from time to time, that's okay. I think you have, and you're continuing to do work that's worth, you know, putting up with that stuff.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Serafina, where can we get hold of Eric's books? I'd like to read one about connecting with Asmodeus. Is there one?
Yeah, no, there absolutely is. You can go to becomealivinggod.com/Asmodeus, and I've got a compendium there that I put together with several other authors that we discussed different aspects of Asmodeus. You know, Asmodeus is known to be a demon of love, and definitely is, but that also comes to extreme self-love. That's the biggest thing I pulled away from Asmodeus, is any kind of love you want to attract and increase in your life, you just start with yourself and it just comes.
That sounds really interesting. I'm so going to get that book.
I'm definitely going to be getting the Wealth Magic book that's just coming out as well.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, that'll be out. And that'll be out in somewhere in the middle of August. I think we're putting out Wealth Magic. So this is a spell book I put together with Connor Kendall. And he's one of the best black magicians in the world at this moment. And so we got together, put together this spell book of all the different spells that we've used for success, for wealth. Some of them, you know, like I said, I've gotten $20, a couple $100. And then some of them I've gotten $30,000 or even more from some of these spells. So we give you all of that, as well as a pathworking video training course. So if you don't love reading and you're more into to video training, then that's available as well. That's at becomealivinggod.com/wealth.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And
Go ahead, Devrin.
I was just going to say that people can catch your live shows on Odyssey as well every Wednesday.
Thank you. No, every Wednesday, if you go to Odyssey/EA Coetting, you can find me there. And every Wednesday I do a live show, so you can jump in the chat, ask questions, and I'll answer them live if I'm able to. And, you know, I usually have a good topic that we'll discuss, and then just have good engagement and great conversation.
Perfect. And that's and it's 7 p.m. London time, isn't it? So I think that's 2 p.m. Eastern.
That's right, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, perfect.
So wait, hang on, it's Wednesday, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. London, yeah. UK time, yeah, on Odyssey.
Oh, excellent. I'll tune into that. Brilliant. How do you find Odyssey? Is it an app?
Yeah, so it's an app. They do have an app. They've got a website, so you can just go. It's Odyssee, and so you can just go to Odyssey there, and it's set up a lot like YouTube, where it just has a good search engine and highlighted videos, and you just type my name, EA Coetting. You can type Black Magic in, you'll find me. Witchcraft, you'll find me. So yeah.
Oh, excellent! Your lives are always good. They're always really interesting.
I always have a lot of fun with it. You know, it's I honestly have used wealth magic really wisely, not necessarily to give myself millions of dollars, but to give myself a perfectly enjoyable life. I really do what I love for a living, and it's awesome.
So, Serafina, I don't think we got Revolution Radio music coming up. So what, isn't it?
I know, yeah. We kind of it's a chance we take every week. If we keep going, then the music comes on and cuts us out. And if we don't, we're kind of waiting for it. But I'm gonna take a risk and ask you a very quick question, if that's okay. Apologies if the music does start coming on. But if there was one spell that you could recommend that people look up for wealth magic, if there was just one, and you had to recommend only one, what would it be?
Boy. Oh, you hit me with a hard one here. well, you know what? So if I could only give somebody one tool, point them in one direction for wealth, I would actually point them to somebody, not myself, but Dr. Wayne Dyer. His book, Manifest Your Destiny, it really sets the model for real manifestation. And so, you know, he gets into to working with different bija mantras and opening your chakras. But he also deals with a lot of the underlying stuff, like Chris and I were talking about, of self-worth and feeling like you can actually, like you're actually worthy of all the wealth that you want to receive. So he gets into all of that, addresses all of that in his book, Manifest Your Destiny. So that's where I would point people to.
Perfect. Thank you. And I think there is definitely something there about believing that you deserve the wealth as well, and actually therefore accepting it.
And yeah, I think that's
the music coming on just on cue there. Sorry to cut me off.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you, listeners, for listening, and see you next week.
See you. Bye.
We'll be right back after this message.
You're going back in?
There's still men out there. God. When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family.